Before we start, I just want you to know that I'm excited to have you on for a couple reasons. One is, you know, when I had Topo and you were like the analyst over at Forrester, I had to follow everything. I had to hear, get all these pings about you.
I'm so excited to get to spend some time with you. You're a living legend, and what you accomplished at Topo and the acquisition there, I hear about that all the time as well. So it's very cool to be here.
Oh, that's
Thank
awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, well then, before we start, Matt, were your thoughts on me being a living legend? Go.
I mean, that's high praise. If I were you, I would relish that. I'd appreciate it. I know you've got three young kids at the house who certainly
don't believe that.
Don't always think that way. I have two young kids at my house who certainly don't think that way about me. So, you know, take the compliment where you can get it, Craig.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So,
from ABM to PLG, from Medic to MedPick, the world of business is constantly evolving. We'll cover the who, what, where, when, why, and most importantly, how you get the transaction. I'm Matt Amundson, and he's Craig Rosenberg. Let's get started.
So as I, you know, just mentioned, like, you know, Mary was sort of the person that my team at Topo used to always alert me to. And then, you know, we did briefings together when I was at Gartner and you were at Outreach, but yep. You know, it's always interesting to me that, like, what added credibility for me with you was that you had years before of actually chief commercial officer experience, GM experience. You know, this was not an ivory tower type of analyst, and that, you know, that background is amazing. If you look at Mary's background, he's a chief commercial officer, has experience, and also an adjunct assistant professor of marketing. So, like, a both scholar and a doer, and then years as, like, one of the best analysts in the business at Forrester. Two years as an evangelist at Outreach, a co-CEO, but CEO of MediaFly. And now it sounds like you're doing some advising again, and we can talk about that. But incredible experience, and that's why we're so excited to have you, Mary Shea, on the show, The Transaction. Thank you so much. So the first question we ask everyone to start the conversation is this, which is, like, what is that thing that the market thinks is a best practice, an approach, a methodology, a truism, whatever that might be, that we need to help them think another way? You know, we like to say they're wrong, and here's what you do, but a nice way to say it is, well, they should be maybe thinking about it a different way and thinking about a different approach. And that's how we like to start. And so I'm going to leave that to you. I'm going to set the table there and let's see where it goes from here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Craig and Matt. It's amazing to be here. As you know from our previous conversations, I have the highest regard for you both. And Craig, as an analyst, our paths have crossed many, many times. Yeah, and I'm excited to riff with you on all things sales tech, rev tech, B2B buying and selling. I think the latest thing that I'm kind of obsessed with right now, and you know how the analyst is. I've done a lot of different jobs, but once you get an obsession on an idea, like, you can't let it go. And I wrote about this back in 2017 when I was at Forrester. It was really this concept, and I didn't have a name for it, which I do now, which is the agile tech-enabled sales force. And my thought at the time, many years ago, was there would be a world where salespeople would achieve their biggest goals, their biggest dreams, but they'd be partnered with technology, amplified or augmented, however we want to talk about or to think about it. And in this world, they probably worked 3 or 4 days a week. They made more money than they'd ever made before. And they had consultative impact on their customers in a bigger way than they'd ever experienced. And so I started thinking about that in 2017. And now we're really on the cusp of it, especially as you see how quickly Gen AI has been commercialized and starting to have an impact in revenue organizations in so many different ways. And I think the biggest thing that I want to debunk now, I guess, to get to the heart of your question, which is, if I'm a revenue leader and I need another $1 million in quota, I don't need to go out and hire 3 salespeople. You know, one who's going to fail, two that are going to compete against each other, and one who's actually going to meet their quota. It's a different world. I need to think about technology as another arrow in my quiver, as this arrow that's going to help me operationalize my sales strategy. And of course, all your listeners know sales strategy is a way to operationalize your company strategy. So I think that, you know, people are still thinking about sales and quota and reaching and exceeding those at the leadership level in a way that's dated. And I'm encouraging leaders whenever I talk to them to start to think about a much smaller organization where 80% of your sellers are going to achieve 100% of your revenue. And that's very different from the 80-20 rule that we've all grown up on, or some of us who have been around here for a while. And I think it's time to lean into that. And I'm just not totally seeing that. And I think, you know, as you know, Craig, sometimes we're a little bit ahead of our time. So I do think that we are going to have very, very small sales organizations, and they're going to be augmented by technology, and it's going to be an amazing profession.
Yeah, there's, well, the 3 days a week thing, me and Matt were like looking at each other going, okay, this is interesting. Let's go with that.
Yes.
So a couple words I think are important. One is augmented. Did you use that word purposely?
Yes, I did. I think a lot about,
keep going.
You know, 1996 when Grainger put the first catalog online. Remember that? And then all the salespeople were freaking out. They were smart enough to double pay. But there's this buzz going around, and Andy Hoare, who I'm sure you know, he was a big analyst at Forrester at the time, wrote The Death of the B2B Salesman, and that caused all this kerfuffle, and everybody got upset, and Forrester clients got upset, and everyone got upset. But the reality is, you know, great salespeople are going to be needed ad infinitum. People buy from people they know, like, and trust. People want to look somebody in the eye. If I'm betting my career on a big initiative, I want someone on the vendor side, a partner side, who's going to be on the hook with me. So yes, I used augmented as a way to purposely say, I don't think the technology is going to take over. I think it's just going to allow sellers to spend more time on upstream activities, things that are more impactful, and to drive more profitable growth for the organizations they rep.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's an important word, because like even on our interviews, you see this, you see that, in my opinion, the rise of technology, the augmentation side, and the issue with selling, those two things can be merged. Whereas you see a lot of people, by the way, including Matt, you got to admit, that was an accusation. Let's discuss. Because you sometimes blame technology for the issues with selling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, I think
I forgot. No, it's your show. Only tell me if you want to.
I was so excited that I got to.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the same way, I think it lines up well with what Mary's talking about here, which is if you're augmenting a sales rep who's great, you're going to get great results. If you're augmenting a sales rep who's not great, you're going to get not great results. And it will be amplified by that technology. So if you are enabled, trained, understand your customers, understand your product, and I think more importantly now than ever before, understand the market and the way the market is going, and you're able to articulate that in a sales cycle, technology that enables you to do that 3 times more frequently than you could before is going to be great. If you can't do those things, then that augmentation is going to be negative. And so, like, I think that I 100% agree with Mary, which is that sales reps are going nowhere. And I think everybody who works in an organization that has somewhat of a talent spread in their sales organization, somebody who's really great and somebody who's at the very bottom, knows the difference between a high quality rep and a low quality rep and what that means. And certainly everybody is trying to say, give me the top man or woman on the sales team and replicate them as much as possible, or replicate the positive impact that they have on the business as much as possible. I think the challenge is trying to figure out exactly what technology is out there that can do that for you. I think that's the challenge right now.
Yeah, I totally agree, Matt. I mean, Craig and I, we've supported big technology purchases, right, for customers. And, you know, they go through the whole process, and the quadrants and the waves and the this and the that. And at the end of the day, it's really, you can pick the best widget, but it's not really about just pressing that button. It's about the people and the processes that are behind them. So I agree with you, Matt, that we don't want more of what's bad. We want the most creative, technology savvy, super smart, insightful salespeople to be amplified. And when I think of augmentation and amplification, it's not just I can do more faster, like marketing automation, or, you know, no disrespect to my previous company, Outreach, which I love. It's not just about more sequences. It's about personalization, customization. What am I doing with the insights that I've learned from the data capture? And how does that put me in a position, you know, to have much more meaningful interactions with my customers and prospects?
Yeah,
for sure. So, so like if I'm just doing back of the envelope math. So you're saying sales reps aren't going anywhere, Matt, but we are saying that we can go to battle with less.
Yeah.
I think so. I think you could be more efficient. I think you could, and I think reps want that. I think they want a smaller team where they have the ability to sell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any rep that doesn't want a larger territory. I mean, that concept will never change, right? I think you're absolutely right. And that's why I keep going back to the, you know, agile technology-enabled Salesforce. So it's going to be a small cadre, and it's going to be probably very small as we continue to move forward. But those top performers are going to be in massive demand and probably make more money than they've ever dreamed of. And also be able to do a bunch of other things and spend time with their families and so on. Hopefully technology makes our lives better. Doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
But some reps are going away. So sales as a profession isn't going anywhere.
Well, I think some...
But we are going to peel off like a fair number of them because we can be more efficient than we could ever before.
Yeah, 100%. I think just the cream of the crop is going to be the ones that remain, right? And the ones that embrace the technology and squeeze every ounce of not just productivity, but intelligence out of that. I think that's the next stage, which is it's not just productivity and efficiency. It's also intelligence and insights. And how do you include those in your conversations and discourse? There will be less. And this might be another show or it might be this show, but probably the SDR role or the top of the funnel role, you're going to see, I don't know that role survives. And, you know, apologies to any SDRs listening. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't have a clear view of that. I'd love your thoughts, Craig.
I think, one is like I'll just bring back one of the other words, which is we're on the cusp. And you can do a lot of things today. The market has to be ready, which is like, you know, we're in that period here where the technology is advancing faster than ever. And there is a suite of tools you can use to do what you're talking about, Mary, but the market has to be ready. We're sort of in that gap where we're starting to fill it. SDRs are a big one because so I believe that the inbound SDR is going to be a bot, a robot.
Yep.
Because that is a the touches and messaging in that are low value and don't require the level of personalization, the big ones. I think the question is, at least in the near term, and this might change the outbound pursuit of targeted accounts. Now, you know, literally, a sales rep has tools at their disposal today, and it will get even better that they don't need an SDR. But I don't know that we're there yet. And like, I'm not sure there's such a pipeline gap right now that everyone's seeing.
Yeah.
That I think in the near term, augmented high value SDRs will remain valuable.
I agree.
And I think that's, But you know, the augmentation you talk about, there's some brilliant stuff happening on the SDR side as well to augment them to be bigger, better, and faster. But more importantly, as you said, personalized, valuable, and capable, even at a really young age and level of experience that is like oftentimes a tenth of what a really good personalized sales rep could do. So I don't want to call for the end of the SDR. I'm not ready for that, and it could just be like my bleeding heart. But I do think, at least in the near term, I do think, like, if I had to, you know, if someone came to me and said, well, look, you start have inbound SDRs so you can learn everything, but like, when you want to start making cuts, bring automation in, because that part of your business can be automated. And then we have to, you can, by augmenting SDRs, you can actually do less, because that was another arms race, you know, 4 years ago, which was,
When I was at Outreach, we probably had 70 or 200 SDRs, you know, in the prime, right? So SDRs, mm-hmm. I agree with you. I'm not ready to call for the end of it. And as co-CEO of MediaFly, I winnowed down that organization, but I still saw it as a crucial, important part of the whole demand gen piece. So I don't think we can afford to let them go. But again, there'll be less of them, right? Because instead of having 20, I had, you know, 4 to 5, right? And I think you'll see that writ large. But you're right. I agree there.
I think the other thing, too, is I think the ubiquity of SDRs is going to change. Because I think that there will be organizations that need SDRs, and whether through their brand or whether through the products that they sell, the SDR function will facilitate a lot of demand for them. But I think for other organizations who have just kind of been like, well, this is a part of the typical playbook. At this point, this is when you add an SDR team. Right. This is how many you add. I think that playbook's going to change pretty dramatically, just because we've seen outbound prospecting really fall into decline.
Been terrible.
But I think if you're an Oracle, if you're a Google, if you're even a brand like Rippling, where there's a lot of brand awareness for you, and somebody's just not responding to your email, but they might respond to a phone call, they still play a very important role in the go-to-market functions within those businesses.
Yeah. And they'd be even better.
I mean, I think we're talking in somewhat in generalities here, but it does depend on what your selling motion's like, what your ideal customer profile looks like. You know, if you're targeting the world's largest B2B brands, then, you know, you probably have a small group of SDRs, but they might be a bit more tenured than, you know, if you had a more transactional type of sale. So there's lots of factors, right, when you consider your sales strategy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Totally agree. Okay, but I want to go back on being on the cusp. So today, Mary, when you talk to someone today and they're saying for the, you know, next year I've got to do X amount, so I'm going to go hire the heck out of people or even hire any, you can make the recommendation today that they look at automation in order to, you know, supercharge the current team versus adding more people or even making plans to do less people than they even have today. But because I'm trying to sort of think about, we're on the cusp.
Yeah.
Right. But like, you do make that recommendation today, and like, what do you say, and what's their, like, have you seen anybody sort of embrace that, and what kind of moves did they make, you know, as a result of that recommendation?
I think there's a lot of different moves. I mean, you know, with the way of the world, you know, companies of all shapes and sizes can't afford to grow at all costs, right? Every company is under some sort of scrutiny right now to drive efficient, profitable growth, right? Which seems simple, but, you know, not what we've been doing over the last 10 to 15 years, at least in tech. And I think it really starts with really revisiting your roles and your role descriptions, right? Now we've got generative AI, and we can spin up role descriptions really, really quickly. But the roles of SDRs and AEs and post-sale personnel have changed a little bit as the buyer has changed. Right now, you know, I think Gartner, we know and love Gartner's research, that they're saying that the buyer is spending about 5% of their time with the seller. So that means you need fundamentally different types of sellers, and you need to maximize that moment. Like, there's no mulligans now. I know we always said that, but when you're thinking about 95% of the buyer's journey is sort of on their own, when you have that moment, it's really a different type of a profile. And so The first thing I recommend to leaders is go take a look at your profiles, assess your team, probably redo your job descriptions, do it with generative AI. And you should probably look at those job descriptions every 6 months, right? It's the world is moving so fast right now that you can't sort of just, check that box and move on to the next thing. I think you probably got to pare back your team and figure out where you're going to invest in, and you've got to upskill folks as well. I think at a time like this, I would invest in internal and external enablement and sales training. We've seen enablement professionals taking a real hit out there in the marketplace. They're the first people to go on the sales team when the going gets hard. I think that's where you really need to invest. And then you've got to make sure you've got the right stack and that you're continuously developing and upskilling your folks so they can maximize the use of that stack. So it's more than, it's a multi-pronged process, as you know, Craig, right?
It feels like, when the S hit the fan, so to speak, the sales enablement, what people went, and then everyone asks, well, why aren't the sellers
performing? Why don't we have a pipeline? No one's supporting them, right? It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, Mary, we've seen a lot of specialization in sales over the course of the last 20 years as like the rise of the SDR, the rise of the solutions engineer, sales consultant, sales architect, whatever you want to call it. So there's become these specialized roles that exist in sales where in the past, a single seller was responsible for building their own pipeline, running somebody through a sales presentation, possibly even demoing them through the product. Are you calling for even more specialization within the sales function?
Yeah, again, a little bit of it depends on what your selling motion is like, what your ICP is like. I actually think we're going to see less specialization just because the economics don't make sense. I mean, we're not in a world where we can necessarily bring in, five highly, highly paid people to help close a deal. Certainly if it's a seven-figure deal, you do those kinds of things. I think we'll see more horizontal reps versus that specialization because the buyer's so able to do so much on their own, whether they, are listening to podcasts like this, reading research of our colleagues and friends, going to a peer review website, reaching out, doing their own research, going to an event. So I feel like there's less need for that specialization across the sales cycle and more need for that. I almost want to say the McKinsey partner, associate partner, junior partner, where someone is just more generally consultative in their approach and they're using the insights that's generated by the rich data capture to inform themselves before every touch point and interaction. I just don't think it's practical to be paying so many different folks. So that's one angle. And then the other angle is I think you'll see more top to top. So sellers are going to use more people who are outside of the direct selling organization to support the education and evaluation and deal closing stage till they get to the transaction, as you all are calling your show, they'll be using the C-suite and other folks versus paying so many people. Like, sales engineers are expensive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, and hard to hire.
Mary, based on your impromptu advertisement for the transaction, I'd like Matt to show you his technology advance. Ready, Matt?
Okay.
The clapper.
The clapper.
So when I wish you were a little quicker, but he bought a clapper, so we like to use it when you make it to.
Big shout out to our friends at Ringmaster for making all this possible. If you or anyone you know is thinking about putting together a podcast, I can't think of a single better partner for them to work with in terms of the creative, the editing, guests, the management of two ginormous egos like mine and Craig's. They are just tremendous. Ringmaster, write them a check.
But Matt, when you were talking specialization, you were thinking like solution consultants, SEs, SDRs, all the things that surround them. The SE thing is really interesting to me right now because it seems like even though the buyers can do a lot of research, they need a lot up front from the salesperson in technical and application specific.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Advice.
It's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it,
you know, at MediaFly, we again we winnowed down the size of the SE organization, but that professional and internal persona is really important. You know, what could happen, again, not to be too controversial, is Please. The SE becomes the seller, right? Because they're not going to have to be chasing deals so much. You've got DocuSign, you've got automation, you've got different ways of, you've got deal rooms where you're doing the final stages of it. Do we have a different type of seller who is more technical, smartest guy or gal in the room versus someone who's just running around, I don't know, organizing the resources and chasing the revenue, chasing the paper? It's not mm-hmm. totally clear for me. Is that a better profile for the salesperson of the future, perhaps?
Well, Matt seemed to be very excited about that. Matt?
Yeah, I've been calling for this for a long time, actually.
What? You have? Yes. By the way, there's no record of said calling on this, but go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. It's been in close doors.
I believe you, Matt.
He's just running. He's doing his run in Foster City. He's like, you know what?
I'm calling this. I believe you. Craig's just giving you a hug.
Yeah. Yeah. He usually does. Whether or not they become the only seller, I think that it's time for them to be the primary seller. Which is like a reinvention of the sales process. Meaning, if I'm buying a technical product, I want to talk to a technical person right up front. And I think as a company that sells a technical product, you want a prospect talking to a technical person right up front. Because in a lot of cases, they're trying to dot I's and cross T's to figure out, is this solution going to work for me? I've got a lot of questions about whether or not I should even be a part of an evaluation here. And putting somebody like that right up front is great. The thing that I think might be interesting is because a lot of these people aren't necessarily like sales inclined, would then be to, once something's been proven out, you know, we've taken it through qualification, we've done our validation, maybe at that point an AE should get involved in order to come in and wrangle a deal and do all the work to get, you know, things through finance and approval cues there.
Right.
That's a different motion, but I think it's actually one that buyers want. And I think we've been so grandfathered into this idea that the flow has to be SDR does some level of light qualification, hands off to an AE who then does discovery and maybe slideware and a high level demo. And then they bring on the technical resource who then proves everything that the people before them said is true. And then the AE comes back in to work the deal. I wonder if we just remove an entire step, if that would be more beneficial to a buyer.
You know, possibly. I mean, I think a couple of things. You know, since buyers are quite informed when they have that initial conversation, and you know, the research is saying they're somewhere in the range of 70% sort of decided that they want to go in this direction, or they've got a short list of vendors, that they're pretty educated when they come to that conversation, so they want to talk to the smart person, you know, quickly. And I'm not mm-hmm. saying that salespeople aren't smart, but they want to get into it quickly, right? They don't want to go through all the other stuff. So I think that's interesting to think about. The other devil's advocate to what you said is, I think the most successful sales experiences are also when you're, you know, whether you start or somewhere you're at the C-suite or the VP level, like I'd want to be careful about getting archived downstream with two technical people talking. So that's just something I would mm-hmm. worry about, right? Which is, at the end of the day, you need to educate the CRO or chief sales officer. And I think if you think about Gartner, and they do a great job probably several levels down, but you know, is that, how do you have that conversation with that CSO too? Because at the end of the day, them and the CFO and the C-suite's somehow going to be involved in this decision.
Yeah,
here I have I appreciate your take, Matt.
Thanks.
Okay, where is this going to go now?
But I'll give you a different way to look at it, in where I see the, so there's a, there is an emerging sort of SE tech stack, right? You think about the test boxes of the world, right? Where the, you know, just trying to alleviate the demo issue, which by the way, in tech, in hardcore tech is an issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're doing like three or four demos in a sales cycle and you got to bring the crew.
Yeah.
So that costs a lot and does not scale. And so that's one piece. The other is like the technical knowledge, right? Being able to provide easy access to the sales rep so they don't have to punt everything and move everything to the back. So in many ways, part of what you're talking about could be viewed the other way, which is there could be less SEs, they will never go away, but we can replicate a lot of their activities on behalf of the sales rep who still has to do business discovery, business positioning, closing. Just another way to look at it. I actually completely understand the overall point of view that you guys are both bringing to the table there. I see that. That's, it's true. Like, and like one is what, you know, sort of as you and Mary led down the path, which is the specialization thing. We're going to have to break that down, right? Because you can now, right? And B, it just doesn't work economically. I mean, it works, but like,
That's how it was the last 15 years. And now, you know, we're at a different juncture where that's not going to fly on the economic side and the margin side. I think the other thing that we haven't really touched on here is that there are great technologies now that help with demos, right? So demo automation. Yeah. And again, I don't think it replaces or the SE goes away, but you know, you can have two SEs supporting a pretty large sales organization instead of 20. So if you think about, you can start to have demos on your website, you can have interactive demos, you can share those with as part of the process and then lead that up to the big demo, right? But you've eliminated, you know, the SE from having to be on six or seven other calls. So I think that's something that I don't see a lot of organizations really digging into and making themselves more effective and efficient through demo automation.
Yeah. And that goes back to the opening point, which is like, now you could take an SE and they're only going hand to hand on the most meaningful, right?
Right.
And they're able to be the most personalized they can be.
Totally personalized,
to deliver,
right?
Because the other, knock it out of the park.
The other five steps have already been done. Now we want to see, you know, our brand, our logo, our use case. Yes, I see that. I think the other thing to kind of swing the conversation that we haven't really talked about is like, think about value selling and value engineers and how companies, you know, big tech will have 20 value engineers. And now there's a number of companies and out there that provide tools where salespeople can really talk intelligently about the quantitative impact of their product and solution. And they can also do it on, you know, when they're coming up for a renewal, what was the realized value over the last 12 months or 24 months or whatever it was. And I see that is going to be a big area too, particularly as every purchase is becoming more and more scrutinized.
Yeah. So Mary, one thing I wanted to go into with you, just because, you know, we're talking about augmenting a sales org, we're making a sales organization more efficient so that we can do it with smaller numbers. And I want you to name like brands or anything like that, but what are some of the categories that you're starting to see emerge that you think will have an impact on making the sales team more efficient, where we can spend more time on automation or use AI for this, so that we can start to realize a future where the team ends up being maybe a half, maybe a third, maybe even as low as a quarter the size that we would have expected?
Yeah. So when you think about leading edge, bleeding edge companies, I always go back to tech because that's, you know, we're willing to do experiments. We're willing to get it wrong and fail and learn and iterate and come back and do it again. So I think the companies that can effectively consolidate their tech stack, because, you know, if you have bloated stacks, then you have disparate data and then you can't take advantage of the insights and intelligence that can be derived from the AI. So I think tech will lead that. But I did some research this past summer or last summer, where I went out and surveyed 300 revenue leaders. And one of the things that we found was that companies that were tracking to meet or exceed their quota, 67% were experimenting with generative AI. And it wasn't limited to technology companies. It was, I probably looked at 14 to 15 different industry verticals. And so I think, you know, so to answer your question very directly, Matt, I think tech and companies that can consolidate and really get tight with their data strategy will be the first to realize that and lead the charge. But I also think this is a moment for traditional industries and traditional businesses where if they can spin up a Gen AI group and think about 2 to 3 different initiatives that they want to start to prioritize, those companies are going to also be very, very successful. And we're already seeing that they are, even when they're just experimenting with it versus, you know, successfully using Gen AI on retention or thought leadership or insights on your pipeline and forecast and deals and so on. I think we're in a interesting moment in time where we're continuing to see tech shed folks through RIFs and, so on and so forth. And what a tremendous boon this is for traditional gritty industries or legacy types of companies to pick up some of that tech and use it to their advantage and to become differentiated from their competitive set. So I think there will be, you know, a handful of big traditional companies that can embrace this next moment in time, whether that's through talent and tech and very strategic initiatives around Gen AI, and they'll be able to benefit from some of these new models that we're talking about.
Yeah. I'd like to go a level deeper there, which is, you know, I think the table stakes of the sales stack now have become some sort of, you know, sales engagement platform, like where you worked in the past. Certainly a call recording software. You know, we all know who those folks are. I guess we can do commercials for these folks. Outreach and Gong, right? Like that's sort of table stakes for the space. Everybody knows I'm a big Salesloft guy. And certainly like newer technology like Apollo, which is, you know, sort of exploding onto the scene.
Yes.
But like to me, that all kind of feels a little bit similar, which is like, hey, this lets us call and email and sort of track our calls, and there's tons of great insights that you get from that. But what are some of the other places where you're thinking, you know, sales leaders should be thinking about making investment that are going to amplify or augment their sales team to be more successful? We talked about, you know, the test boxes of the world and sort of the automated demoing, but what else is out there? I think our listeners are hungry to hear, you know, where they should be starting to investigate.
Great, great question. So I think it's less about this new technology that no one knows about that they should be getting. And because there's like, quite frankly, there's a lot of sales tech out there, even still, as we're seeing, you know, some companies not being able to make the journey and consolidation. I think that for your listeners, the big thing that I would be focused on is starting to, overused word consolidate or streamline my sales tech stack and figure out who to invest with who has multiple products over a platform with a unified data set and who also has a very exciting vision, not just vision for the future, but things that they can do today that leverage embedded AI and generative AI specifically, and an exciting vision for the future. And then make the bet with that partner and then really lean in and partner with them versus, gosh, I should go out and get, you know, I should go get demo automation. I should go get, you know, a social selling tool and advocacy. It's the companies that are going to bring all of these tools together, whether that's through deep integrations and strategic partnerships and M&A or their own internal product development, with a single data set that I think are going to be the winners. And that's where I think your listeners should focus on versus saying, hey, I need to go, I need to go buy Sprout or I need to go, I don't want to use, you know, company names or I need to buy this. I need to buy this. Got to start to move away from the point solutions and look at the vendors that can support every meaningful activity on the that activity and process that has to happen on the revenue cycle, and also support the buyer. So if you think about, you know, the ability to share and get rich signals back on digital content, the ability to have call coaching, the ability to have intelligence in on your pipeline and understand the health of every deal and the forecast, and then the ability to also grab signals from social interactions on LinkedIn. It's the company that can bring all of this together, those vendors. And I just haven't seen, that yet, because everyone's worried about, you know, they're having to offshore innovation because they can't have down rounds. They can't, you know, get more money.
Yeah.
They're trying to focus on their biggest clients. There's all kinds of different things that are happening. And to, you know, go back to your, you mentioned SalesLoft, who I followed very closely, you know, back in the day and have relationships with the original executives there. You know, we saw the Drift, merger acquisition through you know, sort of there. And while I think that was good, I'm like, why is it taking so long? Why, you know, if Seismic and SalesLoft merge or there's an acquisition there, okay, then I'm going to start to pay attention. Like, then we're starting to get to, you know, really interesting things. So I think that was a roundabout way of saying, I think it's less about running after point solutions and really starting to think about vendors that have the ability to support the entire revenue cycle and a vision for the future of generative AI and how that works, and make your bet, because you're not going to get everything from everyone and there's going to be trade-offs.
Yeah, yeah. So I think if I think a good strategy coming from that would be go to the vendors that you have today for your sales tech and find out what their roadmap is.
Yeah,
figure out where their heads are and what their product direction is.
I think that's really
and then figure
important.
Out the ones that are
I think that's important, but I don't think that's all of it, Matt. I think it's like if you talk to CROs or different leaders or even, you know, folks in RevOps who are managing these relationships, they honestly do not know the capabilities, all the capabilities that every vendor has. So I think the first step is go, you know, number one, we're saying go audit your stack and understand where the end dates are. I would say before you even do that, dive into every vendor and understand, do they have call coaching? Do they have, you know, a content management solution? Do they have the ability to, you know, link in with external social? Do they, you know, have intelligence? Like, because all these vendors that we've mentioned, whether it's Gong, MediaFly, SalesLoft, they all have duplicative functionalities, and most companies are paying double, triple, quadruple for those, and they shouldn't be.
But I don't. I mean, I think that makes sense, and I think there are where there's like sort of, I hate to call it this, but like commoditized feature, like features where you're not going to get a huge lift from a point solution,
right?
Like call,
call recording.
The actual, that's something you shouldn't pay twice for.
I completely agree.
But there are.
And the other thing I'll say, Dan, is also like if you're not in tech, and I don't want to use the name of the company because I don't want anyone to get mad at me, but does it make sense to pay for the category leader? Because maybe you just need a sliver of the call coaching, right? If you're a more traditional business.
Yeah.
Like, so why are you paying that company triple when you could maybe get it from someone else?
Yeah. I mean, I just, like, to me, a lot of the aggregation in the space, the feature that they brought over and added to the stack hasn't been necessarily better than the point solution. And I do, and I'm not sure like people are ready to sacrifice functionality. Like forecasting is an example there where it's been added to other stuff, but it's just not good enough yet. Call recording's one where you should absolutely.
Yeah, I think you have to look at the business process, right? And forecasting's an area where you can't mess around, right? You're going to get fired if you can't deliver on your forecasts as a chief revenue officer or sales officer. So, you know, we saw that at, you know, I was at different companies that had so-called forecasting capabilities, and we could never win against that other company that all the, you know, the four-letter company that that all the CROs actually really, really like, right? Because they're used to it. But that company wasn't necessarily pulling in all the behavioral data. So, you know, until they get there, there, you know, there's still challenges. But yes, there are certain business processes where you just simply can't mess around, right? And I do think forecasting certainly is one of them.
Yeah, agreed.
I got one other thing with the 5 minutes left that this topic has come up 5 or 6 times in the last 2 weeks. Ready? I'm going to say it. Matt, you're going to go first on your reaction, and then we'll let Mary take it home.
Okay.
No, you got this one. Signal-based selling. I've heard it, and we had it on one of the guests on the show. I just had a council today with our sales development, and I had my biggest turnout to learn more about signal-based selling. I'm just going to say the word, signal-based selling. Your reaction, go.
It's important. I think it'll be a movement. I think people are going to talk about it a ton. I had a partner day at my company yesterday, and one of the partners there had, I think, the best way of encapsulating signal-based selling, which is like sales, marketing, sales development don't need more data. They need more information, right? There is a proliferation of data, but how do we take that data and make it meaningful and transition it from data to information? Because I do think data has become a little bit of a bad word in sales circles, right? Like, great, you're giving me all this stuff, but what can I actually do with it? And to me, being able to distill it down into a location where they operate, right? So whether that's putting it into, you know, their engagement platform, or it's putting it into CRM. That's one. Two, that signal is somehow meaningful, that it makes sense for them to get it so that they can use it as part of their selling motion.
Yeah, love it. Well, so I'll confess that's the first time I've actually heard that phrase, that phraseology, signal-based selling.
Oh, look at that. We got to launch it in Mary's lexicon today. That's a win. Take that.
For the win. And I've got a whiteboard desk here, so I just wrote it down, guys. So thank you for that. I learned something today. And I love it. I think it's a very catchy phrase. I expect it'll continue to catch on. And I agree with you, Matt. And I'll take your information one step further and say, there is a plethora of information. So I would look at it more as insights. So maybe you start to think of the role of marketing as starting to funnel, you know, as whatever your position is, these are the insights that you need for where you are in this stage with this customer, and take these insights and package them up and then go have meaningful conversations. So I would say it's not about data. It's not about information. It's actually truly about insights, so that at every connection point, whether that's digital, virtual, in person or whatever, you are able to have a very meaningful discourse back and forth. And that's the hope and excitement of all of this, right? If you can do that, then the experience between buyers and sellers continues to improve and everybody wins. So I love that.
Well, we loved having you on here. Craig,
yeah, that was great. Well, I'm not sure, Matt, because I'm like, don't want it to end, but I will bring it home. All right.
I'm sorry.
No, I think one big takeaway for me is that so someone like us on the show and Mary, like, we are like in massive we're taking in as much information about what's next on sales tech as anybody else. It's so interesting. There's a lot happening, and AI clearly accelerated this, and Gen AI accelerated this. It's actually a ton of fun to talk about again.
Yeah.
Because I do say, like, for a couple of years, everyone kept wanting to talk to me about, like, oh my God. Now it's like, wow, we can, like, there's things we can go do. I think it's great. And I think we're at an interesting time where you said, like, we have, you know, we can view the fact that we need to be leaner and meaner with opportunity and start to look at things a different way. That's my big takeaway. But Mary, I just want to say I'm so excited that we got to hang out and talk, and we're going to do it again just so we can. This is like a true, everyone talks about fireside chats. That was a fireside chat. That was just us talking through these things and learning from each other. And that's what we hope to do on the show. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Craig and Matt. It was absolutely wonderful. I love the discussion. And let's keep it going.
Awesome.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Transaction. Craig and I really appreciate the fact that you've listened all the way to the end. What are you actually doing here? For show notes and other episodes, please visit us at thetransactionpod.com. Like and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other place you get your podcast from. The Transaction is sponsored and produced by Ringmaster, the go-to branded podcast team. To discover how your company can leverage B2B podcasts to deliver outsized ROI, visit ringmaster.com now. Either you have walked away from your podcast device, or this is playing somewhere in the background. Someone in your house would really like for you to shut this off now.